You're listening to Dynamo's Dozen. Now let's welcome your host, Dean Dynamo Kelly.
Hey guys and gals, it's your boy Ian the Dynamo Kelly speaking, and have I got some good news for you. If you're like me, and you're a fan of wrestling, boxing, and MMA merch, and memorabilia, there's only one place to go, and that is WrestleMania. WrestleMania, Ireland's first and only wrestling shop. It's located at the very top floor of Dublin's St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre. You can find WrestleMania on Facebook. Follow them on Facebook for the latest updates and what they are selling. It is a case where you may find something that you never thought you might find. Stacks and stacks of magazines. Stacks and stacks of collectibles. Stacks and stacks of t-shirts and everything you could want. And get this, if they don't have it in store, they will get it for you. And this is the kicker. They will deliver it right to your front door. So get in touch with WrestleMania. And for more details, go to WrestleMania on Facebook. And tell them Ian the Dynamo Kelly sent you.
Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week, where I talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh shocks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talc. And you are very welcome back to this bonus episode of Dynamo's Dozen for WrestleMania weekend. Today is the day of WrestleMania. That's right. It's Saturday, the 4th of April. Tonight will be the first of two shows from the WWE for the granddaddy of them all. And I thought today I'd bring you a little bonus episode of Dynamo's Dozen, which I did promise you on our last episode, which I thank you all for downloading and listening to thus far. Doing great numbers so far. So continue listening, continue sharing, continue to wash your hands, isolate, and keep away from the boredom by listening to such shows as Dynamo's Dozen. Today, I do have a great little podcast lined up. I have a veteran of the wrestling game, Mr. Bob Cook. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Bob Cook, he is a Florida wrestler who was trained by the great Malenko, Dean Malenko's father, world-renowned legend and coach. Bob basically worked as a what some might like to call as a carpenter, as an enhancement talent. Call it whatever you will. Some people like the term, some people don't. However, Bob was a great hand in the ring, great mechanic, great at getting guys over. He's worked everybody from the likes of Sting to Ric Flair, absolutely everybody, and is known for having one of the best punches in the whole of the wrestling business of all time. So, if you all get a chance, go and check out Bob Cook's punches. If you can get it on YouTube or get it online, it's all there. And really interesting character. Great at social media, very funny guy. Really nice down-to-earth guy. Very strong in his opinion. We talk in this episode about how he got a start in the wrestling business, to who he worked, where he worked, the likes of NWA on TBS, the likes of WCW. And he also gives his opinion on wrestling in its current state in the modern era. So this is a really, really interesting conversation. And I hope you all like it. And I hope you all are ready for WrestleMania, whether you've got your beers in, whether you're going to sit down and eat a shit ton of pizza, drink lots of Coca-Cola, whatever the hell you're going to do, wrap up tonight, stay indoors, and enjoy wrestling. And this is what it's all about, WrestleMania. Whether it be behind closed doors or not, it's still going to be a great show. It still is WrestleMania, God sakes. So, yeah, sit back, enjoy listening to me have a conversation with Bob Cook, and I will see you all next week to talk about the results and the show itself. Enjoy.
And welcome back to Dynamo's Dozen. I am here with a man that we've been trying to get on the show for the last couple of months, but finally it's happened thanks to a world pandemic and a lockdown of sorts. And Bob has finally taken time from his busy schedule today to come on the show. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on, and I apologize for any indiscretions I caused before.
Hell no. There's no such thing, my friend. This is... much like the wrestling business, these things are always subject to change, you know?
So that's true.
Very much so. First of all, how are you getting on? You're based over in Florida, if I'm correct. Am I right?
Yeah, well, I'm doing fine myself, but I avoid people anyway, so this is nothing new for me. It's like built-in perfect.
Yeah, I was actually only thinking that the other day because I've kind of been friends with you on Facebook now for quite a while, and you're not a guy that tries to take any social media or anything in general too serious, so I always get a great kick out of a lot of your Facebook posts, and a lot of your opinions are based on fact, but you add a little bit of a joking gimmick in there and have some fun with it. But I actually only thought the other day, Bob is gonna absolutely love this, because I saw a great meme the other day, one of those little meme things that comes up. Do you know little photos, and they always have a little message. Yeah. It was saying, when this pandemic is over, if you could still stay 6 feet away from me, that would be great.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I thought
of you. And I see all these people posting, what are you going to do when the pandemic is over? And I say, I'm going to stay home.
Yeah. you're a dog man, yeah?
Yeah, I got a little... a long-haired chihuahua who doesn't look like a rat. I always say long-haired because most chihuahuas look like little rats.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Not my guy.
You're the same as us. Yeah, we got a little miniature Jack Russell mixed with a chihuahua. So she's actually pretty cool. She doesn't have long hair, but she's absolutely crazier than you can imagine as well. So I love those little dogs. Noisy at times, but they're great.
He only barks when someone comes to the door that's not supposed to be there, so that comes in handy.
That's good, guard dog, yeah. So look, let's go back. Let's go back to some of your, I guess, where you started. That's always the best place to start a show with. You were trained by the great Malenko.
That is correct. One of the greatest human beings ever to step foot on God's green earth.
Yeah, I've always heard you talking very fondly of the great Malenko. Obviously, for anyone that doesn't know who the great Malenko is, I guess of the newer generation, obviously Dean Malenko's father, but an amazing coach and an amazing worker in his own right. The whole Malenko family were great workers, but you have... you've always kind of really, really spoken fondly of Mr. Malenko in terms of both as a coach, but as a kind of a mentor in life as well. Can you kind of just explain a little bit about that and what that was like getting trained by such a legend?
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't just a coach in wrestling. He was a life coach. I always consider him a guy. He's like one of those, a card-carrying, been there, done that club guy. You know, he'd been all over the world. He'd been rich. He'd been poor. He'd been famous. He'd been forgotten. He'd been divorced. He'd been married. He'd had every experience in life that you would probably experience throughout your life and have an answer for you when your problems popped up. And he was a guy that you could talk to on any given day. And when you were done talking to him, no matter what your problems were before you started the conversation, when you were done, you felt like you could take on the world. And there's very few people like that I ever met in my life. And he was that way. When he said, how are you doing? I always genuinely thought he meant it when he said it. And you would talk to him about your problems, and he would sit there and he would listen to your problems and give you sound advice. Whether you take it or not is up to you, but he would give it to you.
And that's really, really unique, I guess, as a coach in any sort of sport. You know, even in football, you can give guys, you know, I guess, coaching lessons on the field and how to deal with certain situations. But To have somebody that's experienced life situations, and I guess for you, some of your training, being in the wrestling business, some of the advice you would have been given was how it can go wrong as well as how it can go good, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when you trained with him, he taught you the art of professional wrestling, and I wholeheartedly believe that if you do it correctly, it is an art.
Yeah, for sure.
Because the purpose of wrestling is to not hurt each other, but to make it look like you are, to make it look real about being real, and if you can do that, then, you know, you're darn good. Nowadays, I don't think they do that anymore. It's kind of thrown out the window, guys. There's some kind of weird badge of honor if you beat each other up and go on Facebook and go, look, it's not fake, I got bruises. Well, you're a dummy, because it's supposed to be fake, okay? We don't like to use the term fake, but you're not supposed to hurt each other. You want to hurt each other? There's a stupid sport called MMA. Beat yourselves up, you know?
Yeah.
Pro wrestling isn't that way.
You know, I agree.
It's not supposed to be that way.
100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's
I always took pride in taking a guy in the corner and whipping him with a, you know, ripping him in the side of the head with a punch, and the crowd would go, ooh, like you really hit him and you barely touched him. That means more to me than someone who would knock somebody silly and the crowd still just thinks it's fake anyway. They don't care. You're beating yourself up for nothing. You know, the crowd's still going to go home and go, oh, it's a good show. It's too bad it's all fake. You know, they don't care.
And I guess you mentioned something there. For anybody that's not familiar with Bob Cook and his work, one of the things that you are known for is your punch. And I will say this, not just because you're here. You probably have one of the top two or three, if not the top, pro wrestling punches ever in the history. So much so that, I mean, you'll know the names. There's a list of names that have always put your punch over big time. Arn Anderson being one. I think we saw possibly Sean Waltman a while back on Twitter mentioned something about it too, didn't he?
It's nice to be appreciated that way. I mean, it's like anything. Sometimes a punch looked better than others. It depended on who you were working, the mood you were in, position you were throwing it. But, you know, that. It's nice that people think. Me personally, I think the greatest puncher of all time, when he was on, I'm talking about when he was at his absolute best, motivated, whatever, is Jerry Lawler, because most guys only throw a punch one way.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Randy Savage had a great punch, but he only threw it one way.
Yeah.
Lots of guys have great punches, but they only throw it one way. Not everybody, but a lot.
Sure.
But Jerry Lawler could do it every way. Roundhouses, straight to the face, straight to the jaw, uppercuts, you know, forehead, I mean, lefts, rights.
Yeah.
In phenomenal fashion when he was on.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing a match with him and Terry Funk, I believe it was, in Tennessee, Memphis, obviously. And I think it was either Terry Funk or it was possibly Kerry Von Erich. And I remember Jerry Lawler threw two kind of those long kind of uppercut style punches that you mentioned there.
Yeah.
And holy shit, it just looked like he took the guy's head off. Even the sound off it. It was like it was a legitimate straightener, you know.
Yeah, and if it's that match I posted this week with Terry and Jerry from the Mid South Coliseum, that ring had such a great sound to it too.
Yeah,
which always added to it. And of course, and having a great punch don't mean nothing if the guy's not selling it. So
yeah,
you know, it's a give and take. But you go back and watch some of the matches with Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee. Man, they had some of the most phenomenally real looking matches when it came to punches.
Yeah,
and they weren't even hurting each other at all. You know, and that's the best to me.
Do you think actually? I mean, I guess I started back in 2002 when it was still, I guess, an element of over in the UK. Then again, it was a little bit different, I guess, style wise than say the United States and Japan now. And obviously, with Japan going the way it has, it's so accessible to the modern kind of trainees and whatnot. But I mean, you just mentioned something there, and I don't really see enough of it. I could be wrong, but guys wanting to learn the business, and guys that are even still in the business and wanting to learn how to work, I mean, that right there, Jerry Lawler Memphis matches, is you can go through any number of those matches and just learn so much probably in watching 10 minutes than you can watching a whole New Japan pay-per-view, you know?
Oh, definitely. I mean, Jerry Lawler was great at, they talk about ring psychology. He's one of the best ring psychologists of all time. He could get a response from a crowd, either positive or negative. By that, I mean, behind him as a babyface or hating him as a heel just by facial expressions or the tilt of his head. I mean, Randy Orton has that ability too, but Jerry Lawler is amazing when it comes to the ring, or the crowd psychology, ring psychology, whatever they want to call it.
Yeah.
As both a babyface and a heel, and that in itself is very real. Very real? I mean, very rare.
Yeah, no, it's true. Well, it is real, I guess, in the sense that...
Well, I guess, but...
They elicit the...
But he was great. Like, when he was a babyface, he was totally different than when he was a heel. And very few guys can do that really good. I mean, most guys are one way, and you either like him or you hate him, depending on the role they're trying to play. But Lawler was... You know, if he was a heel, you knew he was a heel, and you knew when he was a babyface. A lot of people don't give him the credit he deserves because they see him as the, you know, the guy on WWE as just the announcer. But
no, I agree. Jerry Lawler was really, and I mean, he worked absolutely everybody in that territory, and he was a god in Memphis, you know. So,
And you look at the guy; he's like 70 years old. He's had very few injuries throughout his whole career. He never wore knee pads, and for. You know, 40 years he's been doing that fist drop off the second rope.
And, yeah.
You know, how he even is able to walk is amazing.
That's true. And I mean, even the pile driver, he'd done one of the best pile drivers where the back was totally arched straight up. And he's got no...
Oh, definitely.
He's got no ass problems or back problems either. So, I mean, he's definitely a healthy man, for sure.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't look 70 years old.
No, no. Then again, he likes women, so maybe that keeps him young.
Neither do I. I look 80, so that's one thing.
So listen, take me back. You start off, how do you end up getting trained by the great Malenko, and why pro wrestling, I guess?
Well, I first started watching that in 1975 here in Florida because I met some kid. I'd moved here from Michigan, and some kid wanted to go home and watch wrestling, and I was just like, why do you want to watch that crap? And I was only like 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah.
I went home and watched it with him, and I fell in love with it instantly. I thought to myself, even today I can think back and think, I was just saying, where has this been all my life, and why doesn't everybody love it? I thought I discovered the greatest thing of all time. Because it had everything that a young kid could, you know, get into. I mean, it had comedy, it had violence, it had drama, it had craziness, characters, blood, you know. And we had the great Gordon Solie and Terry Funk and all the greats that came through Florida at that time. And I wanted to be a wrestler almost from the first day I saw it. I was like, man, I would love to do that someday. And when I broke in 81, I just got lucky because there wasn't Google, you know, there wasn't a school at every corner. People didn't get their income tax checks and buy a ring from High Spots and start training guys. It was, you know, totally different. And I just happened to come out of the armory in Tampa where they held wrestling every Tuesday night for like 30 years for championship wrestling from Florida. And there was a flyer on my car that day that said, become a pro wrestler. It was a great Malenko's wrestling school. I still have the flyer. It's awesome. Not in the greatest shape, but it's, you know, it's almost 40 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great piece of history, you know.
But you know what I did before that, though, is I'd moved to Tampa after I graduated from high school with a friend of mine. He was going to be an electrician, and my goal was to be a wrestler, not having any idea how I was going to do it. But I knew that in Tampa, the Sportatorium is where they taped championship wrestling from Florida on Wednesday mornings, and I went there. After the show, I talked to an older wrestler who's no longer here, but he was a great guy named Gordon Nelson. Mm-hmm. And at that time, he was wrestling, but he later went on to become a guy who was on the ring crew for WCW and different things. But I asked him how I could become a wrestler. I was only 18 years old. He goes, well, kid, you got to get in really good shape, and you come in for a tryout. And in those days, that meant you come in, and they beat you up, and hopefully you don't come back. That's their goal.
Sure.
For you to go back and tell all your friends, holy crap, that wrestling's real. I don't want to go back there. But I never went there because the next week I went to the armory and the flyer was there. So I got saved the humiliation of getting beat up. Like Hulk Hogan talks about where the Hiro Matsuda broke his leg and all that. Same place.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. And I guess that was the idea back then was, I mean, you didn't have internet. You didn't really have much other than word of mouth. So the guys who were the trainers were so protective of the business that they would hope anybody that thought they had the balls to go down and train would then get their asses whooped and go and tell everybody, yeah, that's not fake.
Yeah, that's the goal anyways, but I'm glad that I avoided that part.
Well, yeah.
So I called the number the next day, and the next week or whatever, I went to the school and met an older wrestler who was Malenko's partner at the time. His name was Carl von Stroheim. He was a part of a German gimmick, Carl and Kurt von Stroheim.
Yeah, yeah. I know them, yeah.
That's German, I guess they were German heels and pretty famous in their day, but I met him, first time I ever really met a wrestler up close, and he was a big, burly guy, bald head, same gimmick that he always had, the look, and he's like, can I help you? I'm like, yeah, I'm here to see about being a wrestler, He's a really nice guy, though. He's no longer with us, obviously, but, well, not obviously, because you don't maybe know, but I'm telling you, he's not.
Okay.
But, and then I got to meet Gert and Lincoln. I started literally that next day. And I used to drive every Tuesday and Thursday, 250 miles round trip, before the interstate was open here in Florida, to go to that school to train. And guys today complain about, having to go 30 miles or buying boots or anything. I was excited to get my first pair of boots. I couldn't wait.
Yeah, as you would, of course, yeah.
I mean, years ago, you got your gear from specific places like K&H Wrestling Wear is where you got your trunks and your masks and your whatever you wanted. And B&A Boots is where I got my boots and a lot of the guys did in that era. Nowadays, you just go to Walmart and buy some sneakers and stupid little kick pads and,
You can wrestle.
You're a wrestler. Woo!
Yeah, you can wrestle with your hands in your pocket nowadays, sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And make more money than I ever did. So, hey,
yeah.
That's because people don't care anymore. I mean, I always thought if you as the wrestler are going to treat the business like a joke, then it's always going to be perceived as a joke, and there's nothing you can ever do about that.
Exactly. I think now it goes back to the point that you, and I mean, you're not alone in making this point, a lot of veterans make it, is that the workers nowadays, and you can use that word lightly for a lot of them, for the majority of them, the workers nowadays don't take it serious anymore. So why should the fans take it serious? You know what I mean? It's
exactly.
Perception is reality. So,
but at the same time, I can't sit there and say Orange Cassidy is a piece of crap because he's actually a darn good athlete, and when he doesn't do the hand stuff, he can actually go out there and go. He's making money. People are into him. Hey, who am I to say?
Oh yeah,
but it still makes the business look like a joke.
Oh yeah.
If you're flipping channels, and he's doing all that stuff, and you're not a fan of wrestling, you're going to keep flipping the channels.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look,
you're going to be like, what the hell? Like, if you turn into TNT and he's doing that stupid crap where he's kicking a guy in his hands in his pocket, and not even hitting the guy. If you're just tuning in for a second, you're like, oh my god, this stuff's on TV. It wouldn't hook you.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, again, I don't really knock guys individually. I mean, the point that we're making about resting your hands in your pocket is just shown, I guess, the ridiculousness of what mainstream wrestling, I guess, has become over the years. When we started off talking about stuff like Jerry Lawler going to wrestling with a hand in your pocket. I mean, most of the guys and girls nowadays are really super athletic guys. And girls, I mean, I worry about a lot of them because they are doing far bigger bumps without wearing knee pads and stuff like that nowadays. And you just, every time you kind of watch some of these, I mean, Orange Cassidy is a great example. He does a backflip with his hands in his pockets. Every time you see that, you just kind of close your eyes almost and kind of hope for the best. You know what I mean? The athleticism,
it's like that Darby Allin guy.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
And that guy does some seriously stupid stuff. He should look at guys like Jeff Hardy and whoever who've been hooked on drugs for years because they're in so much pain and realize that my future's not very bright,
Yeah.
I mean, I have all the money in the world, but if I'm in a wheelchair and in pain every day, big deal, put a gun to my head.
That's it. You know what I mean? It's, it's crazy. But I mean, for you, when you started, did you start working, obviously, the Florida circuit? I mean, Florida was probably pretty hot in the 80s, I'd imagine, anyway.
Well, I didn't actually work for the championship wrestling from Florida until 86.
Okay.
And even then, it was you kind of got lucky to work for them because Malenko had kind of been out in the outs with that office. He'd kind of been blackballed. Him and Eddie Graham didn't see eye to eye. And so it wasn't necessarily an in to have been trained by Malenko at that time for championship wrestling from Florida. But so I just got lucky. I just happened to, on the weekends, Malenko had another school outside of Tampa, but pretty much the same distance for me. And every once in a while, I would go on a Saturday or a Sunday to train there as well. And I just happened to be there one day on a Sunday, and a guy came by named Louis Estella, who worked for Florida Wrestling, and said they needed somebody to wrestle at the Eddie Graham Sports Complex that night in Orlando. And I was like, I'll do it, you know.
Of course.
It was a good opportunity. So I drove all the way home because I didn't bring my trunks with me because I never worked out with your wrestling trunks when you practice. I would wear my boots, but never my trunks. So I drove all the way home, you know, and then drove all the way to Orlando, which was like a 3.5-hour drive. Excuse me. I don't have the virus, I don't think. I don't know.
No, me neither. Well, look, but, we're social distancing here anyway, so.
But so I went there, and that's how I got in championship wrestling in Florida. I did really well. Wrestled a guy named Jerry Gray, who became one of my best friends, and a year later, we were the tag team champions of Florida. But that's how I got in. It was that guy, and I went to the show, and after that show, they asked, hey, do you want to do TV Wednesday? And then blah, 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 and just got more work. But before that, I just worked independents, and Malenko had a TV show that he started briefly in 82, I think. It was called IWWA Wrestling. He found a money mark, you know, kind of like Tony Khan, but on a much smaller scale.
Yeah.
And he bled the guy dry, you know. But we had TV for a while, and that was fun. It was my first time to be on TV. And then he had some other little TV things here and there that I would do. But it was good times. That's all I can say. I don't care about my position. I don't care what fans think of me. I had the greatest time of my life, and I would do it all over again exactly the same, except I might not have married the person I married because she's a whore. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that.
Why would you have any regrets? I mean, you got to make a living, I guess, and live a dream that, especially at that time when it was a lot harder to do, you know what I mean? People weren't in positions that they were in unless they, you know, certain somebody wanted them to. Nowadays, you know, it's to a penny.
I mean, I said I would do it all over the same, and if that was your option, like they said, okay, we're going to give you a do-over, but you got to do it exactly the same. You know, I would do it that. But if they said, we're going to give you a do-over, but you can change things, I would change the things I did outside the ring so that I could have bettered myself in the ring. Because I had opportunities that I blew completely because of my outside-the-ring activities, which was very little activity, like getting in better shape and doing what you need to do. You know, I was complacent and just enjoyed being part of the business where I should have been more maybe money-hungry or I don't know. But I just – that's what I would change, put more effort into the outside-the-ring stuff as far as – looking better and, you know.
Do you think because you were in that spot, maybe you just took it for granted a little bit?
I don't know if I took it for granted or if I was just, like I said, I was happy to be there. Like when I did the TV, like you see those, you know, the crappy TV matches.
Yeah.
You know, I was just happy to be there. I mean, you know, I got to wrestle some of the biggest names of all time. And I was always treated with respect. Nobody hurt me. Nobody was mean to me. Nobody was, you know, rude to me. And I was just happy to be there, you know. I was just glad every week when they said, we'll see you next week. Okay. As long as they didn't say, nice knowing you, I was happy, you know.
Yeah, happy days. And I suppose let's jump into that. You worked with WCW. I mean, all of your TV matches are there. I guess your position there at the time would have been kind of an enhancement talent. But I remember you saying a long time ago that, you know, a lot of the guys that you worked were happy for you to get some stuff in there as well. It wasn't just always a case of, you know, yeah, you just do what I tell you, and thank you, fuck you, boy, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, most guys would let you do stuff. I mean, not everybody. They wouldn't let everybody do it. If they trusted you and they thought you were a good enough worker, they would let, like, anytime I worked at Steiner's, they're always like, I'll make sure you get that punch in. I mean, you go back and watch TV matches, very few people knock the Steiner's down with punches, but I did.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, that's I guess, like you said, it was a sign of respect for people that they knew were passionate about the business and the people that could actually work. What was, I guess you actually, this is a good question. You had some of Sting's early TV matches, actually, when he looked very kind of green, I guess, you know, 86, 87 kind of time. Did you kind of get to work him a little bit later? Did you get to see a little bit of the evolution in Sting? Was it good? Was it bad? What's your position?
Oh, definitely.
There?
I mean, he was always a really nice guy. And the first time I worked with him, I think, was in 87 in Miami. That's a match of time, you know, on YouTube or something. But
okay.
And then when I worked for him, that's kind of WCW, but it was like NWA.
NWA, yeah.
And then when I worked with him in WCW, obviously was a much, much better. Same with the guys like Ron Simmons or the Steiners even. In 88, I worked with Scott Steiner in Memphis, or was that Nashville, but the Memphis territory. And, you know, he was green then and stiff. And, you know, but the next year I worked with him in WCW and he just got better and better. And But Sting was always cool. You know, you'd sit in a dressing room with him and he'd put his makeup on and you just tell him what you wanted to do. Like, yeah, okay, let's do this. And he'd go, okay, good. If he didn't like something or he wanted to change, he'd put input. But most of the time he'd just sit there and go, okay, all right, sounds good. You know, because I wouldn't go in there and try to call stuff to make me look good. I would call stuff to make him look good. Of course, he's going to be fine with that, right?
Of course, but, yeah.
But he was just very easy, laid back, very cool guy.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess it's a testament to, I guess, your personality, Bob, because even talking to you here, you're an easy guy to talk to. I mean, you've obviously got a lot of, you were very friendly with most of the big names, you know, in the world of professional wrestling back then, from Jesse Ventura to Ric Flair, who you wrestled, you know, all of the big names back then, like you mentioned, the Steiners. So did you find yourself back then that you were trained well enough that you didn't need to kind of, I guess, play any politics or anything? You were, like you mentioned, you were just happy with your spot, so maybe that's why you were able to get on with everybody, because you didn't have to politic, I suppose.
Well, I mean, in my position, what are you going to politic, you know? I don't like something, I'm going to go home. They go, go ahead, we'll find someone else to be a loser, you know? But I just never got into the drama. Again, I loved wrestling as a kid, and to be involved in it was just an extension of that love. You know, I was just happy to be there. I was like, there's times you'd sit in a dressing room and, like, say, Abdul the Butcher would walk in. You'd go, holy crap, that's Abdul the Butcher. You know, it'd be like a fan, you know. Like, I remember one time I was in a dressing room. I know I'm rambling, but.
No, that's okay. We like that.
Room. I think it was in Jacksonville, and Dusty Rose was in the dressing room, and some other guys, and Bugsy McGraw, and they're talking, and Abdul the Butcher came in. And I thought to myself, holy crap, you know, because I was like, yeah, Abdul the Butcher and Dusty are in the same dressing room. Because, you know, as a kid, you were in. You had that image of them on the cover of the magazines with Abdul with a fork in Dusty's head and blood everywhere. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, what's going to happen? And they, like, meet in the middle.
That's really cool. And in terms of guys, I guess, that you know, who were some of the comrades, I guess, that you had back then, and have you kept in touch with many nowadays? Do you still try and stay in touch with people within the business, or?
Yeah, I mean, Facebook allows you to be in touch with a lot of the guys that were part of my circle. You wouldn't call them enhancement talent or jobbers. I hate both those terms, but
yeah,
those guys, those are most of the guys I travel with, guys like my crew of guys, because when I worked for WCW, part of my job was I would bring guys from Florida and I would rent a van or a car. WCW would pay for it, and I would be able to pick who I wanted to bring with me. And I would always pick people that I liked, got along with, and, you know, friends, because who wants to bring somebody on the road that you don't like?
Sure.
So I'd always pick guys I like Mike Thor and Robbie Ido and Rick Ryder and Nasty Ned Brady and Paul Drake and different guys that were part of the Malenko, all those guys were trained by Malenko, except for Mike, and different guys like that who were just part of my Florida traveling world, you know?
Yeah, and I guess that was probably what kept you sane on the road too, you know what I mean?
Well, that and probably a lot of booze and ring rats and different. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe.
No, you're not.
But the road was so much fun back then because it was almost an outlaw lifestyle. All you had to do is be there on time and do what you were told. Pretty simple. You know, you get to the show 2 or 3 hours early for TV. But if you do house shows, you just get there an hour before the show. And you didn't go over your matches for 2 hours before you went out, like they do nowadays.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, it's you mentioned there using the word kind of, you know, jobbers and enhancement talented. There's the old word carpenter. I think that's a little bit of a better word.
I don't even like that word. I like the term pro wrestler because,
well, that's true.
I trained
also
to be a pro wrestler. I went through the same training as the big stars. We all traveled the same road, stayed in the same hotel room. Some of us shared the same tramps on the road, the ring rats. You know, so I always consider myself a pro wrestler, just in a different level than the other guy. Because, you know, wrestling has several categories and they all need to be filled.
Sure.
As long as you're part of one of those categories, it's better than not being part of anything, you know. So, like, there's got to be a first match, a second match, a main event. Somebody's got to win. Somebody's got to lose. Who cares? You're there. Beat stocking shelves at Walmart.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, and the star can't.
Especially now.
Yeah, hell yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, the star, you know, the star, if we want to use that term, they can't wrestle themselves. So I mean, every component, I guess, was important. I know it wouldn't really work nowadays, that kind of, I guess, that formula. But I guess a lot of stuff isn't working these days. What's your position on wrestling kind of going ahead as normal? WWE WrestleMania going ahead as normal? There's a lot of people that have a lot of opinions on it. I just thought I'd ask you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it doesn't matter because what am I going to do besides watch WrestleMania anyways? It gives me something to watch Saturday and Sunday, and I'm going to watch it.
Me too.
And I'm going to focus on the good. I'm not going to – if you watch anything I post on Facebook, it's not going to be anything negative because there's too many people for that, and I rag on people for that. And there's times when I get in a mood and I'll watch something and think it's horrible and I may say something about it. But there's a lot of good out there. And if you just focus on the good and ignore the negative, you know, eventually some of it might just disappear. Who knows? But,
yeah,
like, I don't know the inner workings of WrestleMania. I don't know really why Vince would do that. It could be in his mindset he doesn't want people to just totally turn off. Like, if he shut the business down point blank two up for 2 months, some of the people are going to realize that, you know, I really don't miss it. I'm not going to watch it anymore. If you just got, you know, who knows what his real mindset is, and who knows what the, you know, by having WrestleMania, maybe he doesn't have to give back the money that's the sponsors spend. I don't know. But he's definitely losing millions of dollars on WrestleMania. So by having it, you're not losing everything. Because some people, I think it's going to be the most watched WrestleMania ever because people are going to be like, well, let's see what happens.
That's, you know, the way I look at it. Yeah.
Paying the pay-per-views and people sign up for the network. There's going to be some people who say they're not going to watch it, but you know they're full of crap. They're just trying to be the rebel. I'm not going to watch it. Those are the same people that say, I don't know about you, but I've never seen an episode of The Walking Dead. Big freaking deal. Do we care? It's a great show. You don't like it? Fine. If you like it, fine. Go to hell. That's what I say. But it's like people would like to be in the center of attention. They want it like it's some kind of badge of honor not to watch something that everybody else talks about. Like this Tiger King show. Have you seen that? It's fantastic.
Dude, it's absolutely it's amazing.
Horrible, miserable.
It's horrible amazing.
People, but it's a great show. But you have people like, I don't want to watch that. I don't. What's this all about? It's like, who cares if you don't want to watch it, you know?
Joe Exotic definitely should have been involved in pro wrestling somehow.
Well, probably will be when he gets out of jail.
Yeah. Him and Sonny can form a team together, eh?
There's some people that are like, oh, that show's fake. I'm like, well, he kayfabe must not be totally dead because Joe's really in jail. So he's really selling it if it's fake.
Well, yeah. I'm with you on that. I hate this kind of... Oh, I'm such a rebel because I'm not going to watch it. I've given up on wrestling. I've given up on this. Well, if you really, you know yourself as well as I do, Bob, when you just lose interest in something, you don't go shouting it to the world or try and change people's opinions or force it down people's throats. You just quietly go about your business and you don't watch what you don't like. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, like, I don't watch any sports, but I don't sit there and go, well, the Super Bowl's on. I'm not watching that crap, but yeah. I don't care. Who cares? By the way, I thought the Super Bowl halftime show this year because I don't watch the game because it's crap. I'm just kidding. But I don't watch the game because I'm not a sports fan. But I thought the Super Bowl halftime show was fantastic.
I didn't see it this year.
Shakira, it's on YouTube. Watch it. It's fantastic. Shakira and Jennifer Lopez. Holy moly.
Well, you've kind of sold me now.
And most people hated it. Not most people. It's got like 150 million views on YouTube. So I'm sure people really hated it. Holy. How many channels get 100 views, let alone 150 million? Might have more than that now, but...
Yeah, it's just, as you say, it is this kind of new mentality of, oh, I'm such a cool dude, I don't follow the grain, I do my own thing. You know, right. WWE will get more views, I think, this year than ever as well.
I like the people that say, oh, I quit watching the WWE 20 years ago because it sucks. I'm like... So what's your frame of reference? You say you haven't watched it in 20 years, and there's been some amazing stuff that's happened in the last 20 years. There's been amazing stuff that's happened in the last year if you just sit there and watch the good stuff and don't focus on the negative. But to sit there and say that, and people do it all the time, oh, that's WWE's crap. I haven't watched it since 95, you know. Well, you've missed a lot of great stuff then, dummy, you know.
Yeah, yeah, there was the Attitude Era. There was lots of great – the Monday Night Wars. There was some great stuff in between.
But in even that era, there wasn't – everything wasn't great. You had Steve Austin and The Rock and Triple H and all that great stuff. But at the same time, you had The Oddities. You had all these other stupid characters.
Yeah.
You know, every WCW had the awesome NWO stuff. But then they had the Dungeon of Doom and they had all this other stupid crap. You know, every era has good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah.
Just focus on the good, forget the bad, and never sleep with the ugly. Oh, wait, where'd that come from?
Hey, a lot of life experience coming out here in this little chat. I like it.
But
we've all been there. So,
you know, I don't watch the shows anymore like I used to. I used to watch Raw and SmackDown religiously, but it's not because I think it's crap. It's because I personally have lost interest in the characters.
Sure.
You know, they're all, I mean, most of them are great. And when I do tune in, it's like, you know, hey, this is great. You know, the action's good. And they're not doing anything bad. But I just, you know, I'm just not into any of the characters. But that's not a knock on the business or to say that it all sucks. It's just, that's my problem. No, it's technically their problem because they're not making the characters interesting to me. And of course, I should be the only one that matters, right? If I don't like it, they should revamp the whole show. But
exactly.
That's what most people think. You
exactly,
know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the stupid fan mentality today is you could have the greatest pay-per-view of all time, but if the main event guy you want to win loses, the whole show sucked. They'll go, oh, geez, I can't believe Daniel Bryan lost. That show sucked. Even though it could be a phenomenal show, because your favorite didn't win, it sucked. That's like going to the movies and saying, well, geez, I really wanted Kurt Russell to live, but he died at the end. That movie sucked. You know, no, if it's a good movie, it's a good movie, you morons.
Yeah, it got you emotionally invested in it, and that's the whole point.
But why take it to that extreme? I mean, it's only mindless entertainment. Any form of entertainment is mindless entertainment to pass the time until you stop sucking air into the lung bags for good.
That's exactly
that's
it.
The deal.
And I tell
you know, and when you're done watching it, watch something else. Go on. I mean, there's people that will bitch about one thing in a match for weeks, and they're just like, oh, like those still people who think Triple H and Sting at WrestleMania 31 or whatever it was, oh, Triple H shouldn't have won. You people are stupid. It was a phenomenal moment, the whole match. Enjoy it. You know, who cares who wins or loses? It doesn't matter.
Well,
how does it affect your life one way or the other?
Especially in this day and age, especially, it doesn't matter who wins or loses. I mean, you've got pretty much every dirt sheet or, you know, internet site telling you what's going to happen beforehand, and most of the time they're right anyway. So most of these people are actually spending all of their days looking up, you know, every little piece of wrestling news they have. It kind of reminds me.
See, I never
me.
Do that.
No, me neither. I never did, even when I used to read magazines when I was young, but that was probably about, you know, at the end of the month when all the pay-per-views had already happened, you know what I mean?
Magazines are always way behind.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it's like nowadays when you get the older, you know, the older women and they watch all of these, you know, TV shows, the soap operas, we call them over here in Ireland. I don't know whether it's the same in the States. It'd be like, you know, your daytime TV kind of shows with the really bad acting and, you know, horrendous storylines. But they buy these magazines, these TV guide magazines, which gives them the breakdown of what's going to happen.
Wow.
In the week coming ahead. And they know
that's
what's
crazy.
Already going to happen. Yeah, yeah. They're, like all of the old, all of the kind of middle-aged moms, they'll sit around going, oh, do you hear what's going to happen on such and such show this week? Oh, yeah, Betty Lou dies. And you're like, well, why watch it then? You know? It's like,
yeah, I don't understand that mentality, but what do I know?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't like to know anything before I watch it. I don't want to know a TV show ending. I don't want to know a movie. I just want to watch it. I don't listen to critics. I don't listen to whiners, you know. But you have people that say, well, I already found out what Raw's like. I'm not even going to watch it. Sounds like crap. That's a stupid mentality. And you got some people who will go into a show thinking it's going to be crap, and no matter how good it is, in their mind, it's crap.
Yeah, I think one of the great things I've allowed myself to do since I stopped wrestling, and especially since I started this podcast, is it's actually given me a reason to go and try to follow as much, you know, from, say, the NXT, the WWE, and AEW. And I do actually find myself nowadays just looking for the positives. Maybe it's that we're older. I don't know. But, yeah, I find myself looking for the positives. Now, with AEW, it can be difficult at times to find positives.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
See, I don't watch AEW, but I watch, like, I'll get the clips on YouTube just to see what's going on. And that stuff with Matt Hardy and Jericho from last week was the worst segment I have seen in years.
This is with Jericho.
And Jericho had the nerve to go on AEW in the beginning and say that, and make fun of WWE's bad creative. And he's part of that crap. He has no room to talk about anything ever again in his life.
Well, I know a lot of people that definitely divided opinion when he was talking to the flying robot.
Oh, that's just pathetic too. But the whole Matt Hardy teleporting to the ring and him sitting there talking in that stupid broken Hardy crap. And Martin Luther King is in the crowd, and Abraham Lincoln, and I'm just, and Tony Schiavone selling the teleport like it's real. What am I seeing? Is he teleporting? Oh my God! And that's coming from a company that promised wrestling.
It's kind of like 2020's version of Dungeon of Doom, really. Isn't it?
Yeah, but even worse, because at least Dungeon of Doom had, you know, some kind of, you know, they had some cool lighting and some smoke.
Listen,
some
when Hogan was trapped in that cave, that was the best thing ever.
Oh yeah,
that was the best.
It was the best thing ever.
Oh, it was the best thing ever.
Oh, I hated it.
I'm obviously taking the piss, dude.
Yeah, I was like,
I'm sure that acting is, I'm sure that piece of acting right there is exactly what got him the Thunder in Paradise gig.
Could be, but but that stuff with Matt Hardy is just the worst. I hated it even in TNA, and I know a lot of people like it, and that's fine to like it, but to do it on a show where they claim they're going to do wrestling. But then again, what else did they have this week? Some guy named Lance Archer wrestled Markle Stunt, who shouldn't even be in the business. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, what's your opinion on the likes of Marco Stunt and you know, I mean,
I think it's ridiculous. Doesn't matter how good he is. It doesn't matter, you know, what he can do. At the end of the day, he looks like a joke, And that's not what you want. And a company, especially, who's promoting the opposite of wanting to look like a joke. They're supposed to be taking wins and losses seriously. They're not supposed to be like the WWE. They're not supposed to be, you know, Doink the Clown without his makeup. You know, they're supposed to be pro wrestling like we loved in the day, and they had that one match with Dustin and Cody last year with a bloodbath, which was fantastic. And then it's all went to crap since.
Do you see any of the younger guys there that you see anything in? I'll throw a couple of names at you. The likes of, say, young Adam Page, Pac. Do you see anything in those guys that, you know, you can tell that they are good workers deep down? Well, I don't know about Paige because I haven't seen enough of him, but I guess I like the look of him. He has a bit of an older school look. But, I mean, Pac can go when he's in with the right opponent. Do you see any kind of hope for them? Or, you know, if
the... Well, I mean, they're good, but they're generic. I mean,
okay.
At the end of the day, are they going to appeal to a mass audience?
Okay, I get you.
Yeah. I mean, they're good, but who's going to tune in? Like, are they going to appeal? Are they going to really ever draw a crowd?
Yeah,
on their own.
It's a good point. I mean, it is a good point. It's, I guess,
it's,
I mean,
like,
would people have said similar about Daniel Bryan maybe 20 years ago as well? Though that's kind of the point I'm making. Is it down?
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
It's down to booking, possibly as well. You know.
You know, with wrestling, it all comes down to whatever clicks. Most of the time, when things really click, it's a by accident, you know?
Sure. Yeah, no, that is true. That is true.
Like Daniel Bryan, and the whole Daniel Bryan thing kind of became popular because they were insinuating that he shouldn't be where he is. And the whole point of the push with Daniel was that he doesn't deserve to be where he is. And then the people just kind of got behind him because they were, you know, it was promoted to them that he shouldn't be there. And they're just like, well, damn, he's good. Let's give him a chance. And they just got behind him, and it just kind of, you know, the yes chant, all that stuff just kind of happens. And that's the kind of stuff you just can't sit in a boardroom and write.
Yeah.
Wrestling's always been that way. It's a classic case. You throw something against the wall and you see what sticks. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But there's sometimes when you see something, like as you're talking about it, and it's so stupid as you're talking about it, there's no way in hell that once you actually do it, that it's going to be any less stupid. Could you imagine sitting in a room and they go, okay, Chris, I'm going to pretend to be this guy who's 3,000 years old, and I'm going to act like a complete idiot, and I'm going to teleport to the ring. Oh, that sounds fantastic, Matt. Let's do it. No, that sounds like crap before you even walk out the door. And then when you do it and it's crap, and you don't even do it live, you do it and it's crap, and you still go, let's air it on national television, on a nationally televised show. Let's air it right now. It should be fantastic, even though it's not fantastic at all.
Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, I got excited.
Yeah, we should definitely have Jim Cornette join us for this episode for sure.
Yeah, I love listening to him.
Oh, dude, he is just money. He is just money. makes a lot of great points as well, though, to be fair.
That's like that NWA show that everybody talks about. That show is absolute garbage for the most part, and I wanted to like it. I loved the look of it. I liked the beginning, and then it just went off the rails into nothing but a mockery from having that the question mark and that stupidity, and the guy that hangs out with him, who's a WWE reject, who was a clown and a buffoon in WWE. It just makes the whole show a mockery. You can't have goofs and then try to have something serious and expect people to take it seriously.
Sure. And do you think, in terms of comedy in wrestling, I mean, there's been a comedy elements in wrestling all through the years. We've always said that with the likes of Bobby the Brain Heenan and on commentary, and obviously in spots, Ric Flair with the face bump. Do you think comedy, I suppose, has its place in wrestling, but in terms of when done right with a spot, would you agree? Like, you know, in certain spots.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to do comedy spots more often than not to make myself look like an idiot.
Yeah, I get
you. You know, never at the expense of who I was wrestling. Like, I almost got yelled at by Bill Watts in WCW, but Sting saved me because I called comedy stuff, and Watts doesn't like comedy. But I always used to do that. Like, I'd go to the ring, and I'd jump over the top rope like you do, and I'd go, hey, that's what a real athlete can do. And then the guy would do something to knock you out of the ring. You come back in, try to jump over again, catch your foot, and act like, oh, I can't, you know, and trip getting in the ring. And people, oh, he's an idiot, you know. But it always made me look like the idiot.
Yeah, I get you, because there's an art to it, because you're kind of putting your opponent over and giving the fans a reason to want to see you get your ass kicked, right?
You're right. You're just like this clumsy idiot because you go out there and brag about how great you are, and then the next time you try to do it, you're a bumbling fool. And
yeah.
And then I would, like, fall out of the ring and come back and ring faster and then catch my foot on the second rope and face plant myself and turn around, take a clothesline, and people just be like, oh, this guy's an idiot. But it made the other guy look good. Yeah. But Watts hates that kind of stuff. And got back to the dressing room, and Watts said, whose idea was that crap? And then Sting goes, it was my idea. And then Watts goes, oh, okay, don't do it again. So he wasn't going to yell at Sting. So Sting saved me from getting yelled at.
See, I knew Sting was a good guy.
if he met me today, he probably wouldn't even remember me or any of that. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. It's a good one. Well, look.
But Bill Watts is the one who put my punch over, so I always liked him anyways.
But yeah, and guys, you know, in kind of wrapping up here, I do recommend, especially young guys out there, if you're going to throw a punch, watch some of Bob Cook's punches. They're available online on YouTube. There's a number of kind of, there was a retweet that was on Twitter. I'll try and find again. I think I tweeted it a while back.
That was cool. Somebody made that, like, punching X-Pac or Six or whatever
it was. Yeah, it was.
1-2-3-Kid when I wrestled him.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And a couple other ones.
Yeah, and it was really cool. And it's I guess for you, it's nice when you see guys like that kind of, you know, give you a little bit of a tribute there. I know Arn Anderson has done the same, and that's kind of...
Well, I knew Sean Waltman before he even got into business. We were friends, and he used to go to shows with me. Like, I was the wrestler, and he would go to the shows with me. So, and he was trained by Malenko, too, so we've known each other a long time.
Oh, that's really cool. And it's great to see him kind of pick his life back up, and, you know, his podcast and all that is really good as well, so...
Yeah, definitely. And he was supposed to be in the Hall of Fame this year again with the NWO, which I'm sure they're still going to do. I heard around SummerSlam, hopefully they will.
I think they have a schedule for SummerSlam. So I guess your message throughout all this, Bob, is stay positive in a time where we've got a pandemic worldwide. There's a lot to be kind of, you know, I guess, sad and upset about and worried about and whatnot. We shouldn't let, you know, WrestleMania not being in front of a crowd affect us, and really just enjoy it and suspend belief, I think.
Right. To me, the worst part about WrestleMania this year is that I always have a WrestleMania party every year for decades.
Yeah.
Old wrestling buddies, we get together. We're not doing that this year. So I'm going to be sitting there watching it by myself with my dog, drinking a lot of Mountain Dew, and probably hating a lot of what I see just because of how they did it, but not going to say it. But, you know, with all the time they have to edit and do everything, every match will probably be perfect because they can edit out anything that wasn't done right. They can redo it. We don't know. And if they were smart with all the technology they have, they should be able to pipe in CGI crowds and the noise, and but who knows what they'll do.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting, and that's kind of the exciting part of it. I mean, for me, WrestleMania weekend is always meant to be special WrestleMania week in terms of if you're a wrestling fan, let's not make any mistake about it. Everyone watches it, you know.
Oh, I always love the whole week. I mean,
yeah.
The Hall of Fame is my favorite thing every year.
Same, yeah.
And it's just, I look forward to it. A lot of people are just always bitching about that. Oh, this guy should go in, that guy should go in. Most of them don't understand anything. But, you know, like a lot of the guys that aren't in for a reason are the ones that were in that lawsuit. And who's going to reward someone with an honor of a lifetime if you're trying to sue somebody? I wouldn't.
No. It's like,
I wrestled for the WWE in 1985 for 3 days, and I got a concussion, and then I wrestled for 30 years on every independent circuit, but I blame WWE for everything, Billy Jack Haynes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So why would you honor guys like that? I wouldn't.
No, I agree, and it's just greed, and it's blaming, it's passing the blame to someone else for bad life decisions on your part, you know what I mean? So...
Oh, definitely. A lot of the lawsuit thing is you get a lot of guys that, you know, they're older, they've spent their money if they even made any, and they're bitter, they're broke, they've been divorced, they've lost everything, whatever the case, and then you got a lawyer that comes along and go, hey, the NFL paid out, you know, billions on this lawsuit. We could do the same. Oh, sign me up.
Yeah. Well, you know, Billy Jack isn't, you know, he's obviously, he's got issues there.
Well, yeah, he only wrestled for the WWE for a short time, but he blamed them for all his problems.
Very short time it was. Yeah, very short time. Great, I mean, great worker back in the day. It's kind of sad to see kind of the way it's gone.
He was always a lunatic. He was always a lunatic, though.
Yeah, he was a famous fight with him and who was it? Oh, shit, I remember hearing about a famous fight where he busted up some guy. In the locker room, I can't remember. It won't come to me now. It was supposed to be a really tough
one. Who knows? Whatever the story is, it was probably embellished a million times over, and the only thing that really happened was that he pushed some guy.
Yeah, you know? Possibly.
In wrestling, 90% of the stories are made up, and the other 10% are completely fake. So figure that out.
Even the Haku ones, huh?
I can't say, because I like Haku. He's always nice to me. You know, we do these Legends lunches in Tampa every 3 months with Brian Blair, and Haku always sits there, and he comes up to me and... How you doing, Bob? How you doing? He's a great guy. So if they say his stories are true, guess what? They're true.
Oh, I'm not arguing with them. No, I wasn't. I was actually being deadly serious there. I would imagine, I would 120% believe that his stories are true, because the funny thing is, they never actually come out of his mouth. You know what I mean?
You look at like shoot interviews. Most of the stuff in shoot interviews, you can just, like, I've been around a lot of the guys that, when they shoot interviews, you're just like, hey, that never happened, or, you know?
Yeah.
But I understand you want to make things sound more interesting.
But Haku was definitely, they all, even Harley Race talked about how tough Haku was, and I mean, Harley Race was one of the tough guys too, so I can believe when I hear stories about them busting somebody up, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Especially, yeah, guys like Harley and Haku, you know, but there's so much in wrestling that's folklore,
yeah,
and legend.
Yeah.
And that's great. But you know, even me, I lie about stuff. You know, like I wrestled Scott Hall at the Orange Bowl in Miami in front of 20,000 people in 87. But when I tell the story now, which I'm doing right now, it was 48,463.
Oh, man, you really sold me on that one. I want to believe the second one now.
Yeah, but there was actually only 20,000. But that was still cool. I mean, who doesn't? But
listen, I mean, dude, it's a business that was based on a lie, so you're always going to find lies with it.
Exactly.
So it's just the way it is. We've got to make ourselves sound a little bit better. An extra couple of pounds here and there, a nip tuck here and there. You know, 5'9", but really 5'11". You know.
All I think is, if we had cell phones and things like we do today back when I was wrestling, we'd all be in jail. That's all I got to say.
Well, listen, dude, I really, really appreciate you taking the time out and coming on the show. It was a great, great conversation. Hopefully you'll come on again sometime. We'll keep in touch, I guess. I might drop you a message during WrestleMania, see what you think on the Saturday, seeing as both of us are not going to have a WrestleMania party, so...
Yeah, well, that's fine with me, as long as I survive the pandemic.
Well, me too. Well, look, the two of us...
If I don't, what the heck?
Well, I mean, Dublin to Florida. Whereabouts in Florida are you based?
Like the middle of the state on the, what is it, West Coast?
Okay.
Not the middle of the state, but the middle of the way down by Sarasota.
Oh, I got you. So, I mean, I think there's enough distance between the two of us for this conversation with social distancing. So, we can't blame either or if we get the disease, you know? So,
yeah, it's just crazy, all the people on Facebook every day. It's just the same stuff. Oh, my rights are being taken away. Stop crying. Shut up and watch TV.
Exactly.
I posted that thing where I said, how many times have you said I can't wait to get home? Yeah. Well, now you have to stay home, so shut up and enjoy it.
Yeah, because as soon as this is over, you're going to be back to reality, and then you'll really regret not spending your time wisely. So, but look, Bob, stay safe, as always. And again, I really, really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, sir. You take care of yourself now.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, once again for joining in and listening to this bonus episode of Dynamo's Dozen and listen to my conversation with Bob Cook. I hope you all are looking forward to WrestleMania as much as I am. Enjoy the show, and we will see you back next week for more Dynamo's Dozen with even more bonus content. Until then, Dynamo is over and out.